The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, welcome to Happy Hour. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Diana Clark. Happy to see you all here. So often when we start meditating, or we do any kind of spiritual practice, or any kind of practice really, we may have this idea that somehow we're going to, this practice is going to improve us, help us improve. It can be part of kind of a subtle or obvious self-improvement project. As soon as I learn to calm down, then I'll be a better person. As soon as I learn to not be filled with anger and stress, I'll be a better person. But actually, this practice is not so much about being a better person. Because implicit in this idea that you need to be a better person is this idea that there's parts of you that are wrong or bad, or somehow would be better if they weren't there. And we're maybe so used to this idea, like, okay, I have to get rid of that habit, I have to get rid of that inclination, I have to get rid of X, Y, and Z, and the list can be very long. So this practice is more about having real intimacy with ourselves, having real understanding ourselves, caring for ourselves, dare I say, love ourselves. Not so much about fixing. And of course I may say that if we start to pay attention to our inner life and the way that we experience the world and the way that we behave in the world, and we do that with start to have an attitude of gentleness, care, openness, it turns out that doing that, having this inquisitiveness, inquiry into how we are, and looking at it with some gentleness and care, it turns out that that creates the conditions in which changes do happen. But it's not like we are making those changes happen. We don't get to choose exactly which changes and exactly when and what it looks like and on our particular schedule. But just that act of taking care. Right? Often when you think back to the people that you love or the people that have loved you, you wanted to hear how they were. You wanted to learn what their feelings were. You cared about what mattered to them. So this practice is about helping us to do that for ourselves. Helping us to, as I said, kind of have this intimacy with ourselves, to see what's really happening, to investigate, to be inquisitive, with a sense of spaciousness, with a sense of ease, with a sense of gentleness. And often that gentleness happens because we have been practicing loving kindness, which helps, whether we intend to or not, which helps kind of open our hearts a little bit, soften things a little bit. So the harshness that we often have, this, oh, I need to get rid of this aspect of myself, if I weren't so shy, if I didn't have jealousy, if I didn't run and eat cookies every time my boss yells at me, or whatever it may be, right? We all have these ideas sometimes. But this inquisitiveness and this curiosity also, when it's coupled with a certain amount of precision, what I mean by that is seeing clearly, experiencing clearly what's really happening here. So when we have a feeling in the body, to not just immediately bounce off of it if it's uncomfortable, or if we're having thoughts that are we wish we didn't have for whatever reason, can we stay with it just for a little while, just to say, oh, okay, this is what anger feels like. Wow. This is what boredom feels like. This is what jealousy feels like. So if we can have some inquisitiveness coupled with a certain amount of precision, but in order to have precision, we need to have a certain amount of openness. And loving kindness practice helps us have that openness and that willingness to be with what's actually happening. Without this feeling that it has to be different and that we have to fix it and somehow make things be other than they are. So the point is not to try to change ourselves here directly. There may changes may happen. We're changing all the time. But instead, we're just practicing to soften our hearts, quiet our mind, be kind to ourselves, be connected to ourselves. And then you may find that changes happen. I think all of us remember when we've loved somebody or they've loved us, this, right, things shift when that happens. So this practice is not about waiting for somebody else or something else to give us this love, but can we with our do this for ourselves, not in a way that is ooey, gooey, sentimental, but it is filled with respect, love, and care. So in order to do this with a loving kindness practice, here we're going to start with a benefactor. That is somebody for whom it's easy to feel love toward. Somebody for whom you have an uncomplicated relationship. This could be a person that you know. It could also just be a leader, perhaps, that you don't actually have a personal relationship with, but you may know about. Somebody maybe who inspires you. If you can't think of an individual or a person, again, the intention here is to a being for whom it's easy to feel love. So maybe it's a kitten or a puppy or a baby. Whatever kind of makes your heart stir and soften a little bit. So with this practice, there are three elements. We have in mind the person or being for whom we're directing loving kindness. That's often with visualization or any other way that makes sense to you to have them in your mind. Maybe you have a felt sense or maybe you have a particular memory that you can bring to mind. And the second is check in with a feeling in your body. I'm pointing to my heart center. Often people report like a warmth or a softening. Not everybody and not all the time, but it may happen. Maybe there's kind of a warm feeling in the belly. Or maybe just a softness and openness of the chest. And the third element are these phrases that help support our intention to incline the mind towards loving kindness. So we repeat these phrases less as a command, may something in particular happen, but more as a way to connect with the sentiment of it. What's the wish behind it, this desire for others to have a good life? So we'll start with a benefactor, and then we'll expand out and do the same practice for ourselves. So with that as an introduction, let's take an alert, upright, and comfortable posture. Trick here, there's no need to struggle or feel in pain, be uncomfortable, but you can sit in such a way that you know, feels supportive, and yet there's some alertness, that your body supports alertness and ease. So you're welcome to shift your posture if you need to while we're doing this meditation. And if you'd like to get up and get more cushions from out there too, of course you're welcome to do that. Then we'll start with some long, slow, deep breaths. Just as a way to connect with the body. And maybe allow some of the tension of the day to leave with the exhale. And we'll start with some relaxation practices, just as a way to encourage ease and peacefulness. Again, we're not going to turn this into a project that we have to be perfectly easeful, but we're just going to create the conditions, which increases the likelihood that we'll have some more ease. You can check in and see if there's some tension in your head or face that can be readily let go of. Sometimes just the act of bringing our awareness to different parts of our body is sufficient for certain more spaciousness to arise. You can check in with the neck and shoulders. The arms and hands, just allowing any tension to just expand or soften, whatever words make sense for you. You can check in with your back and your chest and belly. Perhaps with the exhale, you can breathe some spaciousness or ease into these areas. You can feel the pressure of the ground, the seat, the cushion against your body, and feel grounded here, now. Rest our attention on our legs and our feet. Now we'll do a little bit of mindfulness of breathing practice to help us get started. So you can rest your attention on the sensations of breathing, either the movement of the abdomen or the chest, or perhaps the feeling of air going in and out of your nose. Choose one of those three, whichever feels the most easeful, and simply pay attention in a relaxed, non-effortful way. See if you can just hang out with those sensations of breathing. What does it feel like to have an in-breath? What does it feel like to have an out-breath? The nature of our minds to want to wander, especially at the end of perhaps a busy day. So when you find this happening, just very simply, gently bring it back to the sensations of breathing. for this mindfulness of breathing practice. This can be an alternative to loving kindness if you feel overwhelmed, if you ever feel confused, or this can always be a refuge, a place to go back. It's just the sensations of breathing. And then to start the loving kindness practice, bring to mind somebody for whom it's easy to feel love, to feel warmth, to feel care. Bring this being to mind. Maybe it's a visualization, in whatever way makes sense for you. Maybe check in with your body or wherever you sense the feelings of warmth and care. Maybe there's already some warmth and care there. And then to support cultivating that, growing that, developing that loving, caring feeling, we'll say the phrases. You can repeat silently after me. Having the benefactor in mind. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. If you'd like, you're welcome to modify the phrases to anything that feels more resonant or somehow feels better for you. And of course, the phrases don't need to be in English. If it's nice for you, you can play around and see how it feels if you speak a number of languages. Again, bringing the benefactor to mind. We'll say the phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Now I'm going to be silent for a little bit. You can check in and see if there is a feeling of warmth or care, love. No guarantees that there is, but if so, see if you can gently just investigate, what does it feel like? What temperature is it? Where is it in your body? Is it static, or perhaps it's moving or growing or shrinking? Just however it is, can you be okay with that? Sometimes when we do loving kindness practice, everything except loving kindness arises. That's okay too. Can you hold those feelings or emotions or thoughts? Can you hold them with some gentleness, some care, allowing them to be there? They are already there. It can just be helpful to stop fighting with reality and just accept that whatever's here is here. And whatever is not here is not here. Now we're going to expand our loving kindness practice to include ourselves. So if you did feel some warmth, care, love, see if you can encourage it very gently, no forcing, no real effort, just allowing it to get a little bit bigger. Include yourself. Some people like to visualize themselves as a young person, maybe even a toddler. Some people visualize themselves how they are today. Some people don't visualize, but more tune in to the felt sense of being here now, however you experience that. I'll just modify this phrase slightly. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. So now I'll be silent for a little bit, and you can continue with loving kindness for yourself or for your benefactor or for whomever. Or if it feels like the right thing to do, you can switch back to mindfulness of breathing. And then to end this meditation, feel the pressure of the chair, the cushion, the floor against your body. Feel your feet on the ground. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So at the beginning, before the meditation, I talked about how it can be very easy to think like, okay, I'm going to learn how to do this practice, or I'm going to practice this way as kind of part of this subtle self-improvement project. I remember when I first heard that, I just didn't quite understand. Well, of course it's part of a self-improvement project. If you knew how I really was, you would think I needed improvement. But what I didn't notice is that there's a certain type of, maybe I can say it this way. If there were a child that for some reason would feel better doing a particular thing, and you were to help this child because you love this child, you care and you want them to be well and to be happy and have a good life, so out of love you help them take care of themselves, or you take care of them, is very different than, look, this is wrong and bad and I'm going to beat it out of you kind of a feeling. That's a terrible thing to say, but we often are terrible to ourselves and some of our inner talk. So instead of this idea that, oh, there's something wrong and I have to make it better, can there be this commitment to practice, or commitment to having more spaciousness and ease, cultivating and developing that? Can it be done out of care and respect and warmth? Maybe it's not always easy. Maybe it is easy. Maybe sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. But doing this practice, some of you have heard me say a number of times, just inclines the mind towards warmth and care. I can tell you, even like this year that I've been doing this, I'm just noticing myself how just and spontaneously throughout the day, just phrases of loving kindness, you know, pop in my head. That wasn't the case when I wasn't doing it, you know, as regularly, you know, I hadn't been doing it for years before. So it does, it just, right, it's not a mystery. Just like you do bicep curls, your biceps get bigger. If you incline the mind to think about loving kindness, soften the heart, it becomes easier. So now I'd like to open it up if there's any comments or questions about how that meditation was, or comments or questions about the practice in general or specifically. You could talk about with a benefactor, how was that? Are the phrases helpful? Do you find them distracting? Yes, can we have the microphone? Thank you, Bhupal. It's helpful. We have some people. Do you not want to? Do you want me to just repeat the question?
Well, I don't want the microphone.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just repeat it. I think there's some people are using hearing assisted devices, but yes. If you don't want to, you can just say.
I want to thank you, first of all, thank you so much. Just being here with you and all that you said, it's really led me to a place of calm that I was not feeling when I came in here. I really had so much spinning around and I just couldn't get my mind quiet. It just was really upsetting. I mean, I was allowing it to upset me. And so here's my question. When you know you've made a mistake or you've hurt someone's feelings by something you said, and you didn't you know them superficially, and you didn't have the opportunity to apologize. Do you just let that go, or do you try and? I guess I don't know this person, but personally, really superficially, but I said something that I would not say again. It was hurtful in an indirect way. I didn't realize I was even saying it till afterwards. Do you write them a letter, or do you just keep doing loving kindness towards yourself? How would you respond? Because I'm just obsessing over these two, what are minor mistakes, relatively speaking.
Yeah, I have a few things to say. One is, it's helpful to distinguish guilt from remorse. So how they're different is, guilt is this idea of like, I'm a bad person because I made this mistake. I caused suffering in the world. I hurt somebody. I'm a bad person. It reminds me of this other time I did this thing. I can't believe I did it. As opposed to remorse is more like, whoa, wow, look at that suffering that got caused. Wow, look how bad I feel that I caused that suffering. Wow. I can look at the conditions. Wow, I see how this arose. Wow, I don't want to do this again. There's a more, guilt is more like, I'm a bad person, it gets to be about you. Whereas remorse is this feeling, seeing the connection and feeling how there's suffering out there, and just tapping into that feeling, how uncomfortable you feel, and how maybe you imagine they feel, in such a way that it feels like, I don't want to do that again. Just because you acknowledge the uncomfortableness of it, then the likelihood you're going to do it again is less, right? Just like we're doing loving kindness practice, the likelihood we'll have loving kindness. If you start to feel how uncomfortable it is to do things like that, you won't do it again so much. That's one thing to distinguish between those two. A second thing is to consider is self-forgiveness practice. Turns out, right, we often think like, okay, I need to forgive those people out there, or, but to forgive ourselves for the mistakes that we make, and to forgive ourselves for the ways that we betray ourselves sometimes, and we abandon ourselves, whether in fits of anger, or sadness, or confusion, or fear, like we do things sometimes that later we realize, wow, that was not skillful, that was not helpful, that wasn't wholesome. But can we start to forgive ourselves and to recognize, okay, this did happen, and may I forgive myself? I can recommend Jack Kornfield. You can find on the internet. He has some self-forgiveness practices. And then the third one about, third point is to reach out to this person. I don't know. I don't know the specifics. But I think it's sometimes, I'll just say this, something for you to consider, I don't know, is if there is a reaching out and a apologizing or whatever, kind of, to try to do it in a way which feels like it comes, I'm going like this, open-heartedness. So that even if they respond not in a way that you would like, that you're still okay with it, right? If we're going to do it because we want a very particular outcome, you know, then we may just perpetuate this bad feeling if we don't get the outcome we're expecting, and they should have done this, I did this, right? It's easy how we can get into these cycles, right? We see this, the micro level, these little, our individuals and communities and countries, right? We just kind of get into this whole thing. So those are three things to think about.
Well, the second one, I've been doing a lot of that work, but the first and the third, I really would like to put into practice.
Great, thank you.
A lot of forgiveness work.
The microphone will come to you. There we go.
Well, so you're suggesting that a practice could be done in the case you just mentioned. So does that mean you would want a meditation for yourself on forgiveness of yourself? You mean, say a couple of times you meditate. You're suggesting a meditation.
Yeah, so instead of like the phrases that we're using, I'm just kind of making this up spontaneously. And as I said, Jack Kornfield has some guided meditations on this. He even, I think he has a book that's called Forgiveness Something and Peace. Forgiveness Something like this. But the phrases could be something like this. For the ways that I abandoned and betrayed myself out of fear, anger, and confusion, may I forgive myself. And just, it could be something like that. And you just kind of repeat them, I guess, instead of like the loving kindness phrases we're doing. And then maybe what starts to come up initially is like, oh yeah, I did that thing and then that thing. But just to acknowledge, like, we do things out of fear, out of confusion, often not out of malice, but, you know, out of anger, this, and just, and sometimes it's a way of we abandon ourselves, too. Like, we don't really stay with our experience. We just do and say things, and then later we realize what we've done and said. But if we can stay with our experiences, often we won't have regrets.
Oh, I had another idea. Sometimes we dwell on the wrong things that happen, and we kind of forget some of the good things that happen to us. And so to support this particular meditation, would it be kind of helpful to kind of during the day remember those things that happened that are good for us? And that would kind of help us to do self-meditation or self-congratulations.
Yeah. Some of you may know Rick Hansen. He's he may be a psychologist, I guess. He has this phrase, which I think is great. We have Velcro for bad experiences and Teflon for good experiences. Right, and there's a like evolutionary biology. It makes sense that we tend to the bad things we remember because it's going to keep us safe in the future and stuff like this. And he really points out, and I think I agree with him, that it's helpful to nourish ourselves with the good things. They do happen. We often are dismissive of them, but there are moments of ease in our days. I hope there are. I hope that you have at least some moments of ease. And just to like, oh yeah, I feel a little bit of content. At this moment, maybe it's only, you know, a very short time, 30 seconds, 20 seconds, and maybe it's not even your dominant experience. But we often do have some times when we're not completely stressed out or whatever our negative experiences maybe. So yes, it can be helpful to bring to mind those. And not only bring to mind, but if you can, like how did it feel in your body? Like if was there some spaciousness where your shoulders down and the smiling, whatever went with it. Thank you. I think over here.
On the heels of what this gentleman was just saying, I just thought to share something that I've been doing, not during the day, but and it's been very helpful. At night, sort of when I lie down and start getting a little bit sleepy and going into that zone, I've been sort of saying to myself all the sort of a narrative of all the things I'm grateful for that day. So they're not always things that I did. They might have just things that happened regardless of me. But I find it really helpful just sort of say my gratefuls right before I go off.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding me about that. This turns out like they were doing like scientific studies. I just read a study not too long ago. They're saying the gratefulness practice just makes people happier, right? Just to remember, like, I feel so grateful to live here in the Bay Area. We have such nice weather. I mean, it's raining, but somehow it's kind of nice. And yeah, you know, I don't know. It's a great practice. So thank you for reminding us. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Diana. I guess I know you're like really into the suttas, and I was wondering, I've been working with some like patriarchal conditioning. Did the Buddha, I mean, obviously the conditions were different back in those days and in some ways, but did he address patriarchy at all?
Yeah. So I'm saying yes, that's a question. I'm not saying yes, he did address it. No. I'm just going to be honest. When we look at these scriptures that are 2,600 years ago, they are androcentric. So that means, right, there's really men is kind of at the center. Maybe it's not surprising in that they weren't written down for a few hundred years. And then for these thousands of years, they've been preserved by male monastics. So they were, you know, preserved in their minds, and then they were the ones who wrote them down. So there may have been a lot more kind of about women in there than we see. And then I will also say that there's a collection of poems. Many of them are enlightenment poems by women. It's the oldest poetry by women in the history of humans are in the Buddhist collection. And there's a whole bunch of these poems. They are fantastic. They are beautiful. So there's definitely, you know, women are there. And women, the Buddha taught women, and some women were even like big donors to the monasteries and helped support the monastics and helped support the Buddha. So, but it's definitely focuses on men. And maybe I'll just say one last thing. And when I say focuses on men, it's that the Buddha is most often speaking to monks. And so that's what we have is, you know, two guys talking. A lot.
Okay. I wanted to say something that related to what you were saying,
I'm under the assumption that Kuan Yin was the a figure of compassion. Now, is that from a certain strain of Buddhism? Because I've been in Japan and I went to see all the, you know, the Kuan Yins all over. So I just wanted your comment on that. And then the other comment I wanted to make is, I don't know if you're from the same tradition I am, but it's possible you are. In the Jewish, that's where I'm from. But here's what I was going to say. The patriarchy, there was a matriarchal culture before the patriarchy, and archaeological evidence shows, there's been a lot of evidence now that extends through the Middle East from Iran, it would be what's now Iran, moving up to Africa. The figures that emerged from that and the practices that came out of that were very compassionate and very different from the patriarchy that imposed all the rules and all the war stuff. I mean, it was just completely different and was squashed. And I could give you some sources to read about the matriarchy that preceded the patriarchy in specific cultures, but there really was a difference. And sometimes even women become patriarchal. So, even they sometimes have to remember the other side. And when you speak, the voice to me of really the deepest compassion, which I just felt so much. It's just in your voice. Mm. And it's like what I imagine the matriarchal culture to be like. And there's even a fictional version to go with what is in the Bible. It's called The Red Tent. I don't know if anyone's read this, but it's a biblical story that in the Old Testament that's totally turned around and viewed from a compassionate woman's point of view. It's really an amazing book and would just completely flip what you see in the text.
Yeah, so right in the Buddhist texts, we don't have that. So, there are women there.
Like you do have commentary, right?
And the commentary is by men talking about men. let's see. So, and you know, I don't know the commentary to the women's poems, the Terigatha. I don't actually know the commentary to that. But the primary commentator, yeah, so without going into a huge academic lecture, I'll just say Kuan Yin, the practice that we're doing here is kind of arose from a certain place in India at a certain time, and the practices that have Kuan Yin was a little bit later and a little bit different place in India. And then it mostly went up into China and really flourished up in China. So it didn't really flourish in the place where the practice that we're doing here originated. And but here in the West, in America, right, everything's coming here and getting all jumbled up and mixed together and in kind of a beautiful way. So it's 7 o'clock. I'm happy to stay here if you have some more comments. And otherwise, I wish you all a wonderful evening. Thank you.